Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by the morning after movie sex scene. So that's why I slept with my bra on. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. I'm Alex. With me, as always, is James. Say hello, James.
Hello, James.
Nice. Classic.
Classic.
Yeah. Today is sort of our... Well, welcome back. Happy New Year. All that good stuff. Today is...
Kwanzaa Hana Christmas Kuss.
Did you get Kwanzaa in there?
Yeah, Kwanzaa.
Oh, I didn't hear
it. In the last part.
Okay, yep. Fair enough. Well, yeah, happy that word to all of you. So today is going to be sort of a look at 2011 in film. Travis is going to be joining us shortly. And by joining us, I mean me. James is going off on assignment. First, we're going to talk about something that was initially going to be like a weekly feature on the MacGuffin Men, but didn't end up working out. But it's called What Douchey Thing Did James Cameron Say Recently? This is 2011 edition, and kind of a down year for James Cameron douchey things. Like, had we done this at the like, it would have only been our third podcast, but had we done it for 2010, it would have been amazing.
There's so much good stuff.
Him talking about the Avatar sex scene, the BP oil spill when he had some ideas about how to clean it up.
Yeah, he had a meeting with
them. Oh my God.
I forgot.
It was so good. I think Kevin Costner did too. But, we've only got two quotes here, but they're still pretty good. When talking about how he's going to shoot Avatar 2 and 3, he's talking about shooting them at a higher frame rate, like 48 frames per second or 60 frames per second. I believe The Hobbit's being shot at 48 frames per second, which basically means the image is smoother. Like, it's kind of jarring because you're just not used to it. You're used to 24 frames per second, and that's what makes, like, a film flicker. He's talking about shooting at 48 frames, and it's going to be a little jarring initially, but... smoother, closer to reality is the idea. James Cameron's quote, when you author and project a movie at 48 or 60 frames per second, it becomes a different movie. The 3D shows you a window in reality. The higher frame rate takes the glass out of the window. In fact, it is just reality. So James Cameron, with Avatar 2 and 3, will be creating reality.
Yeah. Not even a documentary film, but reality on screen.
And he doesn't even say a reality. Like, this is going to be a reality. It's reality. Avatar isn't reality, and we've actually been living in, like, the Matrix the whole time.
Yeah, so that's creating reality. That's what, a quarter step away from being God, saying you're creating reality?
I think that might be bigger than God. That's saying that what you think God has created doesn't actually exist.
It's just something James Cameron authored.
It's the prologue to this thing that James Cameron's made.
In 3D.
Obviously.
What a champ.
Obviously. I think a special... this isn't even like a real James Cameron quote, but the Titanic 3D trailer is a special kind of douchiness. One, it's being released in April 2012, like the Titanic 3D conversion, which happens to be the 100th anniversary of the Titanic, which is just a great time to profit on the Titanic. Hey, remember that awful, awful thing that happened 100 years ago? Here's this very, you know, fictionalized version of that. Let's check that out.
Good for him.
Also, the trailer's really funny. Like, when Celine Dion comes in, I just laugh. Because, I mean, that joke, that song's just become a joke. Not that it was ever a classic song. It was just always sort of annoying. And now it's just like, whenever people hear it, they laugh.
Really quickly, that turned into a punchline.
Yeah. And there's Inception bells through it. Like, there's a dinging of, like, the I guess it's sort of like a large clock or maybe like a ship bell or something. It's like ding ding all throughout. It's like the Inception brand, but it's just with a bell. But anyways, within the first 15 seconds of the trailer, we get this text blurb that comes up saying, all caps, the world's most beloved and acclaimed film.
Yep.
Which is like...
Well, when you create reality, you decide what is beloved and what is acclaimed.
That's a good point. After we've established that James Cameron is higher than God, then yeah. Thank you for your contributions to douchiness, James Cameron.
Like, do you think after he's done the watch, he's like, that was the most beloved and acclaimed piss anyone has ever had or ever will have? James Cameron.
I think he probably just, like, walks out with his arms spread, like, doing the King of the World pose, and then someone right there has to say... that was the world's most beloved and acclaimed piss of all. Like, somebody has to watch
it. Somebody
has to watch it.
Just for that.
He hires a renowned film critic. He hires A.O. Scott to watch him piss and say these things.
And he signs his name in the water, because even nature wants his autograph.
Oh, good times.
And two first names, which is never a good
time. Never.
Never, ever.
So let's move on to a director we like and a director we enjoy talking about.
I enjoy talking about James Cameron.
Well, yeah, that's true. Sorry. And a director whose movies we enjoy watching.
There we go.
As opposed to watching them for fodder for our jokes.
Yes, that's a different story than James Cameron.
Yeah, I saw Dragon Tattoo, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, directed by David Fincher. Did you?
Nope.
Yet. Okay.
You know me.
Yeah. No, I know. We've been over this.
I have a movie podcast or something.
Yeah, exactly. And we did, we did a two-part podcast on the movies of David Fincher, and we said we'd sort of chime in with what I thought about Dragon Tattoo, and it was pretty good.
Nice.
I'm going to keep it spoiler-free because the person sitting next to me hasn't seen it, and, you know, in case you haven't seen it. It was really, really unsettling at times, but it was more Zodiac than Seven, so it was very investigation-based, which I enjoyed. It was a really cool movie, and it was a really Finchery movie. Like, it was very all about, like, things we were talking about in our podcast, or sort of the whole thing is based around, like, the failure of the family system, a crime that the police couldn't solve, so they bring in a journalist and a private investigator, I don't think I'm spoiling anything by saying that Elizabeth gets raped at one point in the movie.
That's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
That's fair.
And she's raped by her social services person.
Bello.
So, yeah. So social services, David Fincher does not think highly of you.
Clearly.
It's a very pro-technology movie as well, which kind of stands with the Fincher thing with, like, he loves digital and he's all about sort of evolution. And he sort of said recently, after seeing The Dark Knight Prologue or talking about it, he said, like, he doesn't want to shoot a movie in IMAX because he thinks the digital equivalent of that type of quality is coming, and he doesn't like the resolution change between IMAX and regular film and all that stuff, and the formatting change. But yeah, he's really pro digital technology. And I mean, David Fincher said his job is to sort of unsettle people, and I think his aesthetic can sort of be described as, like, fuck you, I guess. these established institutions, he generally is against them throughout film. It's all about sort of the common person. And Lisbeth is sort of like a walking fuck you. Yeah. And
I see that from the posters and commercials.
Exactly. And there's even, like, at one point in the movie, she's wearing a shirt, and there are promotional stills of this, a shirt that says, fuck you, you fucking fuck. That's just, like, so over the top. And, yeah, and I think, like, she's the most Finchery character in a Fincher movie, and I think it's a really cool movie. And even right down, there's one shot early in the movie where snow is flying directly at the camera, which you never see in movies. Yeah. Like, and there's sort of like a separated island where the family, I mean, this is all stuff you learn very early on, but the family that the film is kind of about, they're separated from everybody else by on an island, and Michael Blomqvist, the Daniel Craig character, he kind of loses his life savings right in the, like, first scene. He loses his life savings because of the failure of the legal system. Like, it's just all this stuff. It's a really great movie. I highly recommend you check it out. The sound was crazy. The visuals are great. I highly recommend you check it out, James, being that you have liked the Fincher stuff so far.
CGI breath?
No, actually. And I was thinking about that the second time I saw it, because it's all in the winter.
Yeah, I know that.
And, I mean, some scenes you can see breath, some scenes you can't. And
he must have heard our podcast.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. So, but yeah, that was how I felt about it. And
we should decide on Fincher-esque or Fincherian or some word to describe things that are Fincher-like.
I think Fincherian works better. It's awkward. And it sounds kind of like...
Because it, yeah. I think that's...
Sounds James Cameron-y.
Well,
or Cameronian. But, yeah. So, we're going to bring... we're going to kick James out of the studio. And, you got to go data mine for more douchey James Cameron quotes. Yeah. We've got to make sure this feature's better in 2012.
It shouldn't take too long, but I'll go.
And, Travis is going to be joining us. So, welcome to the podcast, Travis.
Hi, Travis.
Hey, guys. It's really nice to be talking to you, Alex and Jimmy.
Yeah. Jimmy actually just left the room to go research
more James Cameron douchiness quotes. So, yeah.
Couldn't even say hi to me?
Well, he did and then left immediately. It's very confusing.
Asshole. Yeah. I'm going to try that. I'm going to see if that works as a successful, like, social strategy.
Yep. I suggest
and maybe
it.
Professionally, too.
Yeah, that's how I leave all places now. It's like, oh, it's 2 a.m. It's last call. I just finished my drink. I have to go research douchey things that James Cameron just said.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. I'll do that. I'll try that in every situation.
It's recommended. So welcome to the podcast, Travis.
It's nice to be back. Yeah. It's been a while. And guess what I've watched at least once since we last talked?
Friday Night Lights.
Yes. I watched the pilot 2 days ago.
Still good. So we will not talk about that at all.
Come
because
on.
Then this will be a 4-hour podcast.
And am I going to get like a red card if I mention it?
No, it's totally acceptable to mention because I mention it 3 times a day and I haven't watched an episode in like 4 months, but
I don't want to drive you into like a frenzy.
Exactly. It's dangerous getting me to talk about it. So yeah, we're going to talk about, the year 2011 and,
2K11.
Yeah, 2K11, and what films came out, what we liked, what we didn't like. It's going to be very general survey of the year in film. We're not really, like, we're going to avoid spoilers, and just so anybody can listen to it, and we'll pick our favorite movies and also, you know, talk about some performances and stuff like that. So I guess, do you want to sort of start with action?
Yeah, sure. Action. I was looking through, I don't know if either of you mentioned this, I, in my boredom at work, compiled a list of all of the 2011 movies from that Wikipedia page, 2011 in film. And I listed everything that I watched, everything that, and I got you and Jimmy to fill it out as well.
Mm-hmm. It's pronounced James on
James,
the podcast.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's a professional
right.
name.
I forgot. I'm not supposed to say Jimmy.
We're trying to keep up an air of like vague professionability here by using words like professionability.
Right,
which
and
don't exist for our linguists out there. Yeah, anyways.
Okay, so action. Yeah. I looked through and I don't normally like to make sweeping statements about years in film because you can always disprove. There's always a counter example. I didn't of the ones that I saw, I didn't see really many traditional action movies. Mm-hmm. And the ones that I did, they had a hook. They had a really like a unique angle, and
like what?
Let me take a look here. So of what I saw, I mean, the big one that sticks out that's on everybody's list is Drive.
Yes,
and I think with most of the ones that I saw that were action movies, they were also something else, or they were also like, I didn't see Fast Five. I wanted to.
Well, that's your first, second, third, and fourth problem, Travis.
Okay. Yeah. But I did. I saw so many of them on the list that you sent me, and a lot of what I saw in 2011 was in the last like 2 or 3 weeks preparing for this.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, no. And it was great because like I love this time of year. I love lists. I love the list because I could live off of all of the list movies.
Yeah.
For another year until the best of 2012 comes out.
No, I agree with that generally. And I mean, even making this list, I was really trying hard to find stuff from the first half of the year. Cause I know everybody's list is always compiled by stuff that comes out later in the year. And, I always feel like it's just cause I haven't watched these movies again. And I mean, I've watched some movies from earlier in the year again. And it's just sort of like these movies are just the best of the year have been coming out, like starting in September was when they really started. And then the last month or two.
Well, that kind of came up during the last, Armand White thing that I sent you where he was criticizing the embargo that they put on Dragon Tattoo. Somebody reviewed it early. It was a positive review.
It was a review.
It was a blowjob of a review. And the studio didn't like it because their release schedule is so highly structured to this like big December push.
Yeah.
It's like, why not just make it so that March doesn't suck?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
You're making them all year. You plan them years in advance. Why not just like put out a couple good movies?
Well, I mean, and the idea is the thing I was talking about, people will remember what they saw. And it's sort of like anytime something like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which was released in February of 2004, probably, February or March, actually, and then ended up winning a screenplay Oscar the next year's Oscars. It's like, it's always stuff like that is really surprising because nobody ever expects you to remember these things. And I guess sort of Kate Winslet, people, the Academy will just rewatch things that she's in around Oscar time or something because they just love her.
Of the list, I saw two movies in January and then nothing until the middle of March.
Yeah.
Anyways, action.
Yeah.
What did I say? Okay, so I saw The Adjustment Bureau, which is more of a sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
I saw
that could be like any category, I think.
But. I saw Limitless, but it was structured very differently from an action movie. It really reminded me of a couple comic book authors that I follow. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of like a crime sort of movie, action movie with a bit of a sci-fi twist. It was, I liked Limitless. I thought it was really great.
Yeah, I mean, my problem with Limitless was the same problem I had with In Time. Limitless was a better movie, but because In Time is just terrible. It was a really, really amazing idea. And Limitless, the idea is much cooler than In Time because that idea is just so cool. And I found myself like, within 20 minutes, I was just totally taken out of the movie and was just sort of like, well, I don't like the way this is going, but I love this idea. So I'm just going to, I just ended up thinking, what would I do with all that brain capacity?
Well, I liked that in Limitless, they didn't, it was sort of a broad idea and you can do anything with it, but they really got into like the minutia of it.
Yeah.
They got into the specific situations and the moral complexities of it. And, you know what? I don't know. It was really cool. It felt thorough.
Just for our listeners, Limitless was the Bradley Cooper movie where he's suddenly given a supply of pills where it fully expands his brain. Basically, he's just a much smarter person. Instantly a genius, basically.
And featuring De Niro face.
Yes, there's a really good De Niro face towards the ending.
So that was Limitless was cool. Source Code was cool. Source Code kind of felt like one of those, like it was a short story because to spoil it, but it takes place. It's one of those like
time loop movies. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And physically it takes place in a very
small space, yeah.
Small space and, not like buried small space, but like just, it's like a, there's a stage and they don't really go off.
Yeah. I really liked Source Code. I hated the ending. I mean, we won't break it down here. But like Source Code had a really good chance of being on like my favorite movies of the year list until like the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. I don't not recommend it. And I get the feeling that you're not recommending it.
I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying, I do not fully endorse this film. But I love Michelle Monaghan. I thought she was great in that movie. And the worst part of that movie is there's a logical ending place that they just don't use that I think would have been perfect. And that's one of my gripes at the
last. I want you to email me that later.
Yeah, that's fine. I think this
should I just keep going down the list of like action movies?
Anything that you sort of felt was good enough that you want to mention, you know, like
everything. Hannah was cool.
I didn't love Hannah. I really liked her escape sequence. I thought that was one of the best action scenes of the year, I thought.
Yeah, it wasn't like the best movie ever, and it wasn't the best like action movie, but I got what they were going for, and I really respect what they were doing, and it was cool, and all the actors were good, and it was really cool.
Yeah, that thing, the thing with Hannah, which is about a child assassin, basically, is it was a very episodic movie, and only like half of the episodes were really cool.
Now that you mention it, I had never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
It's like sort of like, you'd say 8 or 10
vignettes, you know, like it's just all these different places and it's like, this is the situation and Hannah go, you know?
Well, now that you mention it, it kind of like, it seems like I want to watch it again thinking about that because it could be that it was set up to be like an album because it was so much about the music.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I didn't find the music that great though. I thought the music in the one sequence I was explaining is really great.
If you liked Run Lola Run and would like to see that with a child assassin.
Yeah, that's true. I did love Run Lola Run. It's a great movie.
I didn't at the time, but I'll see it again. Like it's on my like to review list.
It's pretty great.
Summer of Superheroes that I think we'll talk about
later. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Transformers
is a terrible movie, and I've made this argument before. I got really excited the first time I saw Transformers. I wrote a review immediately upon getting home and stayed up to like 4 a.m. writing it and just was just so excited. And it's just such like an excited review. And I totally felt that way at the time and still sort of feel that way about the second half. Like, I think from the highway sequence onward, that movie is just amazing. Like, as far as the action, I thought it was so great.
It seemed almost like an experiment. Like, okay, let's see how much we can do.
I know, and that's why it was amazing.
Let's take the approach that there is no such thing as too much anything.
Yeah, well, that's...
And I get that.
That's kind of what Michael Bay has been doing since probably... Yeah, since Armageddon. And it's just sort of like technology is expanding to broaden what is... You know, what you can do. Like, he's always doing as much as humanly possible, or as much as possible to put in a movie, and it's just sort of that keeps being expanded.
All I can think of is just, like, rendering, like, server farms.
Yep.
Oh, rendering definitely. That movie, and, like, just pieces of computers melting. Yep. Like, that's all I can think of at the end. I'm like, this is a big, huge machine, where this is a series of machines that have spat out this movie, and, yeah. like, it's... I mean, I guess that's creatively valid from...
Yeah. Like, let's not even pretend the highway sequence wasn't amazing. When I saw that, people applauded.
Refresh my memory.
The one where it's sort of Bumblebee is being chased on a highway. Shia, Sam Witwicky's in the car. And at one point, Bumblebee throws Shia into the air. And there's just this long slow motion shot of Shia falling through the air.
And that was pretty cool.
Bumblebee's like transforming behind him and fighting enemies, and then transforms back into the car. Shia's screaming the whole time, and it catches Shia in the car as he's transforming back. And it was just the coolest thing. And people broke out into applause in the middle of this movie the first time I saw it. I thought it was so cool. But yeah. Anyways, we should stop talking about Michael Bay because I do that too often.
Okay, going down the list. That was good. Harry Potter was cool.
Harry Potter. I heard Harriet.
No, you didn't see Harriet Potter.
No.
Like another.
Are you? They're trying to expand the franchise.
There's another long-running film and book series about a wizard that is not Harriet Potter that I haven't heard of.
Yeah, I think it's so Harriet Potter. Who wrote that? Is that Stephanie Meyer's Twilight follow-up?
I don't have a joke. Yeah. I don't have a joke for
that. That's fine. So Harry Potter was good. I've never been into Harry Potter.
I hadn't either. I watched all of them in the summer because I told Amanda that I would.
Amanda being your girlfriend, for people that are not in the know.
Not in a like condescending way, but in a like, okay, you're probably going to have to go through this when like Dark Knight Rises comes out.
Yeah.
So like,
were you guys dating when The Dark Knight came out?
No, we weren't.
Oh my God, she has no idea.
I try to shield her from... I haven't sent her any... I've sent her maybe one or two emails with all...
It's not even that. It's that she's going to see you the month before, you know? And it's just sort of like... You're going to end up telling her stories about how you lost sleep over the excitement of a Batman movie coming
out. I'm not the only one, though.
No, I know.
You and like two
or three other
friends.
Yeah, I'm single though. My girlfriends don't have to. It's just the people that I'm talking to that are also single now that will just never date me because they know I lose sleep over Batman movies coming out.
Yeah, the key is to not mention it.
Just own it.
Yeah, no. She'll be like, "Oh, we have plans with my friends," and my only response in July will be,
"That is incorrect, Amanda."
I know it was cool, and I kind of got the same feeling from that I got out of like Lord of the Rings, which is like, I mean, I'll watch it and it's cool and I get it and it's not really my thing, and there's some things to like and some things to not like, but I feel really happy for the fans because they got a satisfying, creatively valid closure.
Yeah, and I get that.
It being somebody that followed like comic book movies in the early 2000s and in the 90s. That has very rarely happened to me. Like, yeah. Batman is the closest that I would get to that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, I get that. I mean, I'm really happy for you guys. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, really happy. But they didn't show the Dark Knight teaser in front of it, so I spent the first 30 minutes in a rage.
Yeah, no, I got a text message from you that night.
During the movie.
Yeah. Like,
I don't do that.
No, I'm sure it was, like, right as the, you know, like the feature presentation is about to start, things going on, you were just rage texting as many people as possible.
Yeah, pretty much. It was cool. What else? Attack the Block was not really an action movie, I guess. Okay. Rise of the Planet of the Apes was surprising. Like, not the greatest movie ever, but I think expectations were so low.
Okay.
That it was like, oh, that was a really solid, like, 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
And that made it better? I guess.
Yeah, I didn't particularly care for that movie. I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sold on the idea that James Franco was awake.
No. Sure. Everybody that I talked to that saw it was like, okay, in the first 10 minutes, you have to make a decision. I am okay with not believing that he is a scientist.
Yeah.
He's not.
He totally was a scientist.
Doesn't look like one. Yeah, and now that's absurd now that I'm saying it out loud with words.
James Franco, scientist.
James Franco in a lab.
Oh yeah.
At eight a.m.
Yeah.
Every morning.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all. And the only other one that's really on my list from this year is Drive.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I liked all of these movies that we're talking about that I saw that were action movies, but they all had like a hook.
Yeah.
Of some kind.
Yeah.
They were either did a really specific thing style-wise, or there was a really unique creative voice, or they had some other genre mixed in. And maybe that would change if I'd seen Fast Five. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, Travis, I'm here to tell you, one, just another thing I really want to single out, The Mechanic with Jason Statham and Ben Foster. That was a really cool movie. You didn't see that?
No. Did Neville Dean and Taylor do that?
No. Okay. It was Simon West.
What else has Simon West done?
He did Con Air, the first Tomb Raider movie. He sort of fell from grace somewhere in between. Like, I think he did, like, the... What's that house invasion movie? There's someone inside the house. When a Stranger Calls, maybe?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think he did that in between. But, yeah, and The Mechanic. There's, like, this really incredible sequence in Chicago that was really cool. I highly recommend. But, yes, that was a conventional action movie. They don't get a lot more conventional than Fast Five, but Fast Five was really, really well done, and I just loved it. You know, I think The Rock is the only person that's taking it seriously, and he's taking it so seriously that it's amazing.
I'm a fan. I love him. I think he's.
I've been a fan of him since before he was an actor. You know, like. I always think The Rundown is just such a highly underrated movie in general.
I'm thinking about Walking Tall. Mm. He tweeted about Walking Tall today. I saw a thing that was like, Walking Tall, true story, really proud to play the man. And it wasn't like a response.
Just out of the blue.
It wasn't a response to anything. It was just like, really. And then it had hashtag 2x4 to the face.
That's
not
amazing.
In response to anything. I don't know. Maybe Walking Tall is trending on Twitter or something. I don't know.
Well, WWE is really big on getting things trending. Like in the middle of broadcasts now, they'll just sort of they'll pop up and say, "Now trending on Twitter is Jack Swagger," and it's like, and they celebrate things trending number one on live shows. It's really crazy.
It's so weird. Yeah. That's kind of cool though. That shows a certain amount of savvy in what I assume would not like. The whole industry of. Like professional wrestling is kind of about being marketing savvy, isn't it?
Exactly. But it's the, I mean, I don't know that I'm comfortable using the word savvy because it's the type of savvy that's just like a WWE type of savvy, which is extremely like violent, like Twitter, 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 you know, like they decided they're going to focus on Twitter and that's all they're talking about now.
So not focus, just like,
just discuss exclusively.
Okay.
Yeah. Fast Five is a great movie. And I wrote about this in the article. I put it on Tuesday, my sort of like written up best of list. It's sort of this really kind of old school movie that is just kind of funny now because it's sort of out of place because it's got these two big lumbering action heroes, Vin Diesel and The Rock. We haven't seen like a successful, like Stallone, Schwarzenegger since the 80s. Was the heyday of that. And so The Rock, that's basically the reason he's never become an action star is because he's that type of action star. He's just too big and jacked to be taken as a serious person as like John McClane, right?
But like, I think they were trying to make Vin Diesel and Jason Statham be the new version of those guys that you met, like the 80s action star.
Yeah, and it's just the... Like,
Vin Diesel has no charisma.
No, and the difference between, I agree with that. And the difference between Vin Diesel and Jason Statham is that Jason Statham fully committed to a genre. He's never tried to not be in action movies.
This is true. When you mentioned the mechanic, I was like, I just pictured the front of the DVD to crank.
He's Steven Seagal. He's just a better actor, is what Jason Statham is. Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I doubt you. I just, like, I don't know if I have the tools to evaluate that.
Like, his only where he's not playing the transporter, his only movies like that are Guy Ritchie movies, basically, right? Which just sort of play into his natural charisma.
And he's kind of playing, I'm under the impression that Guy Ritchie casts the people that are the most like his characters in real life. Like,
yeah.
I'm reading about Vinnie Jones. Mm-hmm. And he brought onto that, and it's like, you just cast a guy and then wrote that guy in your movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, maybe...
A lot of successful people do that, though, you know?
I'm not saying that that's bad. That, like, Judd Apatow's built his entire career.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I've loved most of the steps of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And Fast Five is just sort of this really sort of old-school type movie. And, I mean, it's also a heist movie, which is... they sort of transitioned into, and it's just extremely entertaining. It's funny sometimes when it's not supposed to be funny.
What are they stealing in Fast Five? Unless it's a spoiler.
Like money. They're stealing money. but it's just, it's not the what, it's the how, man. It's the how. And it is actually legitimately clever towards the end. There's sort of a clever twist. Some of the intentional comedy doesn't work, but a lot of the unintentional comedy works a lot. The Rock's wearing a shirt that's about 14 sizes too small the whole time. It's great. He's got a sexy, his sexy assistant cop. But yeah, see Fast Five, man. It's the best.
I will.
And then watch Fast Five again. So let's move on to something you love talking about, superhero movies.
All right. This was weird because, like, 2011 was... people talk about there being a lot of superhero movies,
mm-hmm.
but... even when, and they were putting out a lot in the early 2000s. Like I did that write up of Daredevil, and there was just like tons coming out that people don't really remember. There were so many.
Mm-hmm.
There were fewer this year than there were then, but this was the year with the most high profile
tentpole ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And that blew my mind. And they were all tentpoles of secondary characters.
Yep.
Which was like, When I heard the announcements of them like coming out gradually, it was like, how is that going to work? Like, I couldn't think of one of them being the center of all the attention.
Okay.
And they all got, for better or for worse, sort of equal attention in the press. And like, people gave them all. Now, when I say people, I mean like online reviews.
Yeah.
Excuse me. That was a belch. Brought to you by Waterloo Dark Beer and Pizza Delight. Pizza. I'm kind of surprised in the way that I was after Iron Man came out that reviewers gave these secondary characters a fair shake,
mm-hmm.
in terms of like evaluating the movies. Like Thor. Thor is, it's crazy that people's moms went to see that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, like, because Chris Hemsworth is jacked, but like, and if you look at all four of them, they have...
Yeah, so we're talking Thor, Captain America, Green Lantern, and...
X-Men
babies. First class, yeah. X-Men babies, yeah.
But, like, it's they all had more unique hooks. Like, none of them were... none of them were structured in a traditional way, and they were with characters that people sort of knew, and mm-hmm. in some cases, I would debate that... Thor is popular within the comics, but I really doubted that people at large understood, like, well, he's like a mythological character, but like they've also made this very specific fictional character.
I think
that it's the same thing, and like, how does that work?
I think people are just sort of at this point used to superhero movies. I think that's a big part of it. Like,
that's
good
though. That's great because you don't need to spend the whole movie like, he's really special, and like it seemed like it required less work in terms of convincing people that it was okay. Like, there's a lot less build up to someone putting on a costume and punching people in the face.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of just we're just ready for that. And I agree with you that it's a good thing, because, you know, not everybody needs to see origin story, costume, fight scene, big boss scene, and, you know.
And maybe that was why Green Lantern didn't work, because it was the only one that didn't have a hook.
Okay.
And that and the, like, super abstractness mm-hmm. of the villain. Like, they fight fear with
Yeah. Yeah.
And I read the comics and I don't understand the mechanics of it. And you could make an interesting story out of those characters, but they just didn't put a... There was no hook.
Okay.
There was nothing to make it interesting other than Ryan Reynolds being quippy. Like, there's no unique...
That like, man can quip.
He can. And yeah. And he was trying so hard.
Yeah.
He was trying so hard, and I felt bad for him. Because, like, yeah. And I wanted to like it, too.
So what was your favorite superhero movie of the year?
That's tough. Okay. I think Captain America was my favorite straight-up superhero movie of the year.
Okay. That is also my choice.
My favorite of those four movies is maybe X-Men First Class.
Yeah. I love the idea of X-Men First Class. There was just some of it that just really didn't work. The CGI didn't work for me. There was that weird montage with all the weird cutting that I didn't love. But
they were getting trained. Can't just send children.
No, but the way it was cut, there was like...
Without a montage.
Well, no, I agree. You need a montage. We've got to have a montage. But there was like these quarter screens, you know, sliding in and out of frame and stuff. And the whole structure of that montage sequence is just really weird. Mm. But I did enjoy it. And I enjoyed Magneto Killspree guy. He was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So... Yeah, X-Men was like, it shouldn't have worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still, like, little me is still kind of surprised that the public has accepted the X-Men as a movie franchise that's been running for 10 years.
Dude, why are you, like, they're just making good movies. People are open to good movies. You know?
I'm not used to it. I'm used to, like, the punishment of Ghost Rider.
But X-Men existed before Ghost Rider, years before.
No. Okay. But, like, X-Men was, like, the first big one, and I'm still kind of surprised. Like, oh, that didn't suck.
Yeah.
Because I was used to those movies sucking for so long, and then they were good.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was weird that they were like, oh, we're going to do a prequel, and it's going to be an all new cast, and it's a different director, and like there were troubles with the script. And
oh yeah, no, it sounds like an idea that just shouldn't work. I agree.
And Kevin Bacon is then villain. And it's like, oh, this is going to be boring, and he's going to be like a really terrible villain.
When and has Kevin Bacon awesome. Ever been boring?
Well, I don't know.
Kevin Bacon's awesome.
He raped that girl in Hollow Man. When he was invisible, he invisible raped somebody. That's
terrible, but that is the character. And he was hilarious in the parts of Hollow Man I've seen.
On TV.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen like 40% of that movie totally out of order.
Are watching them, you're just like on your way to the fridge.
Exactly.
Okay. No,
hoping there's no invisible Kevin Bacon in my kitchen.
Yeah, X-Men was cool because it really, really committed to the tone of it being like a James Bond movie. I kept waiting for it to become like a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it never really happened.
Okay.
Like even the last couple sequences, they had done so much laid so much groundwork for the world, like for the movie world, that you really didn't feel ridiculous.
Okay.
At the end,
yep.
And Fassbender and McAvoy were incredible.
I agree with half of that. I didn't love McAvoy.
You didn't like him? Why not?
I don't know. There was something about him. It just rubbed me the wrong way. But. I didn't see, you know, never-ending knowledge in him, I guess.
You saw that in Patrick Stewart?
More so. Well, I mean, he's a bald old man in a wheelchair. It's a lot easier to picture him spending his entire life reading constantly. And he already knows he's telekinetic, so he's just learning from people walking by.
Oh, okay.
You know those people walking by thinking about Darwin and stuff.
Yeah, you would totally just pick that stuff up.
Yeah. All right. So your favorite of those movies was X-Men, is what you're saying.
Tie between that and Captain America, because Captain America was so... If anybody watches the Venture Brothers, it's such a like straight-faced celebration of these ridiculous old comic books.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody was so likable in it, and it made you forget about the fact that the movie did not acknowledge the Holocaust in any way.
Yeah, that's true. Tommy Lee Jones was there, which is awesome.
Eating.
Oh my God, he was so funny. That scene with the steak. Yeah, so, I mean, we've mentioned our excitement, and I don't want to talk about this for too long.
No. Movie of the year was very, I think the overall, not just action movie, the best movie of the year was leaked set pictures from The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, and to all the people that don't care about action movies or superhero movies that are still with us, by the way, we really structured this poorly. We should have put comedy first or something. But yeah, we're not going to talk about The Dark Knight Rises too long.
We always put comedy first. We're always making jokes.
Yeah. Well,
you mean movies that were comedic.
We just eliminated so much of our audience by talking about action, and then it's like, oh, okay, the action stuff's over, good. Oh, wait, they're moving to
superheroes. How long have we been talking?
Like half an hour, man.
Kidding me?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Anyway, so yeah, the set reports, you're very big on this stuff, right? For movies that you care about a lot?
I have had a lot of jobs that are boring.
Okay. And that I thought that was the end of the sentence.
completely unfiltered and unsupervised internet access.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, like at my one job, I set up Google Reader like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I've never looked back.
Yeah.
So I have this time where I'm not really doing anything or helping anybody, and I don't have projects or professional development in some cases. So I read about what happened on the set of the Batman movie for like sometimes 6 hours a day.
Yeah. And my question is, why do you want to know what's happening on the set of it? Is it just because
I want to be watching it? I want to be watching that movie right now.
But it's doesn't
like wanting it's people think that it's maybe that I don't care about spoilers or that I like that I want to know the minutiae of it, but like, no, it's just, I want it to be July.
Yeah.
I want to be watching it.
No, I agree with that. I want it to be July too, but like, it's like, you telling me that you sort of watched the prologue, like a cam version of the prologue, right?
Yeah, I did. I saw the top half of the last half of the prologue because that person's cell phone shifted. And I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it.
And this is sort of like, I was going to see Mission Impossible 4 in IMAX until they said, well, the first 7 minutes of The Dark Knight Rises is going to play in front of it. And I mean, people are like, oh, that's stupid. Why would you do that? And it's like, I don't want to see the first 7 minutes of a movie that I'm really, really excited about that I'm obviously going to see anyways. It's just sort of just going to make me more excited. And I don't need any more excitement over a movie, you know, like.
Short answer, I have no control.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I have had like one mild sexual thought, not about you, since this started, and I have masturbated myself to completion. I have no control. Sexual food, none. Okay.
Fair enough. I think that's a podcast first. And yeah, no, I mean, they did this with The Dark Knight, and I didn't watch it then either, but. That's fair. I was just curious as to your reasoning for that.
No, there's no reason for it that is not totally insane and stupid.
Okay.
So I will cop to that. This has become more about me at this point. This is becoming a WTF podcast.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about my problems.
Yep.
But 2011. Back
speaking to 2011. Of WTF, let's talk about comedy.
Okay.
2011 and comedy. Any favorites?
There was a lot of mediocre comedy.
In general, I put this at a middle of the pack kind of year for pretty much every genre. Like there was nothing this like The Social Network or Toy Story 3 levels of good this year.
Kind of waiting for the next year. Yeah. There were a lot of things I was okay about. People talk about Bridesmaids a lot. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah. That was another belt brought to you by Waterloo Dark. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
What else came out? Crazy Stupid Love was good. But the last, like, it would have been a really, really great movie if not for the last 20 minutes. Because I found myself wondering, I think we're getting pretty loosey-goosey.
Yeah. I think we're getting pretty loosey-goosey with really great. I think we'd have to take a pretty inventive turn. Because the whole thing, it was a very good, very formulaic movie.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. It would have lived up. I gauge these movies based on lived up to expectation.
Gotcha.
It's just kind of a loaded term.
Well, I thought part of the reason that movie was well liked was because that nobody had any expectations for it.
Same thing with Friends with Benefits.
Yeah, I just watched that today, actually.
I liked it, and it did what I wanted it to do.
Okay. My thing with that movie, one, Timberlake was actually the least offensive I've seen him in any movie in that.
You don't like Timberlake?
Pardon?
You don't like Timberlake?
Oh, I hate Timberlake. I think he's a terrible
actor.
What the
hell is wrong with you?
I think he's terrible. You just, like, you can't see him not trying. You can't avoid seeing him, like, physically try to be very good. And I think that's the problem. I mean, good actors, it needs to always look effortless. And he's just not. Right. And, like, he worked in a lot of the first half, but when things started to have to get more serious, it was just like, oh, God, he's gone.
You know, so, I think of him and, like, Will Smith and The Rock on kind of that category of, like, guys with charisma who are trying. But you think The Rock would just, like, be that way in real life? Like, if he was, like, a jack, he would just be, like, giving people the people's he would be doing the people's eyebrow.
Well, and that's the thing, and I think that's why Justin Timberlake really worked for the first half, because I think the person in the first half is very close to Justin Timberlake. And the second half, I think he's just sort of a fun-loving guy, and he doesn't necessarily find himself in a lot of serious situations, you know?
Okay.
And so it just doesn't work. And that was the thing. Like, yeah. Anyways, and I mean, movies like that, I enjoyed how self-reflexive it was. Yeah, but there were some parts like that type of movie I just can't deal with, because you can always tell that the people writing the movie are writing it from the place of, you know, the discussion with the father before the climactic scene, you know, like where it's like they're really writing about the regret, and it's sort of just like rewriting their life, you know, and that's what sort of depresses me about those movies. But
all right.
I always think like the elder wise person is always the writer. So we both really liked 50-50, right? Like, you really enjoyed that?
Maybe my favorite movie of the year.
Okay.
The more I go down the list of like stuff that was just okay or stuff that met expectation, 50-50 might be my favorite movie of the year. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty great. It's extremely funny, and the emotional moments work. You know?
It wasn't exploitative either. It felt really like there was a certain amount of levity about it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I mean, even just the one quick thing where he's walking out of chemo, I think maybe for the first time, or whichever time when he's really, really high. But yeah, the scene where Joseph Gordon-Levitt is just sort of walking out of the hospital just after chemo, and they roll like a body bag past him, and he's just like trying to be all serious for a second, and right when it gets past him, he just breaks out laughing. I think that's the tone of the entire movie. It's just sort of laughing at death, kind of, but still being worried about it.
When you say that you thought he was like being serious when he saw the body bag,
he was feigning serious.
I didn't feel like he was feigning it. I feel like that scene is representative of the whole movie.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely.
But I didn't feel like he was feigning the seriousness. I felt like it treated the subject with the gravity that it needed to be. And he also like, it was still, he had a life. He had a life. It wasn't about being in hospitals. It wasn't about,
I agree,
you know, coping with your mortality. Like, not all of it. Like, you do that stuff, but it wasn't the whole thing. It wasn't. It didn't feel Oscar baity, I guess. I'm trying
really
to think of a better word for that.
Well, yeah, and I think, I mean, that it didn't feel Oscar baity is kind of a big part of it, and kind of why it's so good. Because, you know, Oscar bait movies don't really reach our generation. And by reach, I mean really affect us. We might like them, but it's a really, like, nobody our age is clamoring to see The Iron Lady, you know? We don't have any.
Why are they making that movie again?
I don't know, because Meryl Streep needed to have a nomination this year. You know how she goes. What else did you see that you really liked?
Liked 50-50. Like, I already had Brother. Kind of felt like it was in the same category as Crazy Stupid Love and Friends with Benefits.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, there's a lot of people that I like in it and doing stuff that I sort of like. It was good. It was better than I expected it to be, because the trailer was very like, oh, romantic comedy, and like Paul Rudd is a pothead. And,
yeah. You know, I really enjoyed it.
I did. I liked it from beginning to end. And what was the name of that actor that we were talking about who's not in anything? TJ Miller.
Oh, okay. I thought you were blanking on Rashida Jones' name for a second. I
was never very upset. Never. Don't speak that way about Rashida.
I started a 2-tweet Twitter campaign to get her to call me. She has not called me. Upsetting.
Did you even bother to put like her Twitter account in it?
Or I didn't even bother.
No hashtags.
I didn't even bother to look and see if she has a Twitter account. You know, I just want the.
If I were her and I saw that, I'd be like, this guy is really uncommitted.
Google I don't want to go, you know, be a stalker, basically.
It's not being a stalker. If she has a Twitter account, there'll be hundreds of thousands of people probably stalking her.
Yeah.
Maybe you would be one of them. I don't know. Maybe it's that you don't want to give yourself that level of access.
Yeah.
No, it was great. Steve Coogan was really cool.
Yeah.
All of the, like...
Paul Rudd was great. I don't know if I mentioned that. He was really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, he was good. I mean, he was, you know, doing his thing.
And hearing Zooey Deschanel curse liberally just made me very happy. I don't know why. She just hasn't, I don't think she's done that since like 2001 or something. So
that's
just nice.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. I mean, I liked it. It wasn't challenging really in any way, but it was good. Yeah. I liked it. I had a good time. Comedy-wise, I don't think there was... I thought Paul was a really big disappointment.
Oh, because it was a terrible movie. It was a disappointment in that I'm going to the cinema, I hope what I'm about to watch is good, and then Paul was just really, really bad.
That was cutting. That was really...
I don't hate a lot of movies, so I get pretty upset when I do hate a movie.
And I like everybody in it, and like there were a lot of...
Landry was even in it.
Landry!
Lights.
Landry was in it. Yeah. He was, oh my God. And it got a lot of, I want to say accolades, but I don't know if that's appropriate with the group of people that expressed it, but the sort of like nerd bloggers really liked it. Cause like, go to Comic-Con and there's Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and they can do no wrong. And
yeah, no, I think that's part of it. They're sort of very much, they're like Kevin Smith type people, like people that are really dedicated to them or just, it's just, they can do no wrong. And I love Simon Pegg and Edward Frost or Nick Frost.
Nick Frost, yeah. And I get that they're both really into that. They're actually like a genuine part of that culture as fans. Yeah. And I get all that. But a lot of the other parts of the movie really felt like people coming up to me and saying, "Oh, you like comic books? You should probably watch The Big Bang Theory."
Yeah, no, that's fair.
And Big Bang Theory is such a like. It's not something that. Humanizes those people. No, it's not something that makes a particular hobby or subculture. It feels, and again, maybe this is a tangent, but it felt like bullying almost.
Okay.
To watch Big Bang Theory.
That's fair.
But anyways, Paul was kind of like, they just kind of did okay. Like it wasn't I didn't hate it like you did, but I also was like, oh, this is meant to appeal to me. And it's like,
it totally just doesn't.
Not,
yeah.
No.
It's a very sort of like for us, by us type of mentality, which is how I feel Kevin Smith fans are a lot.
That's a discussion for another time.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't start that. I really enjoyed The Descendants. You didn't see, right?
I haven't seen it yet. I really want to. And it's like I can't.
It was one of the like. Yeah. It's a movie that has like one really big problem, both like literally and figuratively, but I didn't think I really liked it when I was walking out, but I realized that sort of over the next few days, I was just really thinking about it a lot. And I think that's a sign of a good movie and it was really funny. And you know, I mean,
is this one of the things where it like hinges on the ending?
No, it doesn't at all. It's like the whole, it's basically a part of the plot that I just really didn't like. But Clooney was, you know, adequately Cloonian, Cloononian. I don't know.
I like that second one.
Yeah. And his daughter, I think, I wish I could remember her name. I'm going to look it up. Shailen Woodley or something. Really great as sort of the teenage daughter. But yeah, very good movie. Totally worth seeing.
Sort of the teenage daughter, like she also was a spy.
Well, like she's the teenage daughter also in the movie. She's like 20 in real life, you know, so just out. Okay. No, yeah, she's absolutely a teenager, 100% a teenager in the
That's
film.
Her role. That's yeah. the, okay, okay. Cool. Yeah, no, it's at the top of my list. What else did you see that you liked?
I loved Carnage. With
it's I just, thought when you said it was hilarious, I haven't seen the trailer for it. I didn't know it was a comedy. So when you said it was hilarious, God. I thought you meant like it sucked. But it,
even just the trailer for that movie is just hilarious. The American trailer, and it's just sort of it's one of those these type of movies happen every once in a while, every few years, where sort of just four really good actors get together and just. That's kind of the whole movie. I don't think there's really a character shown speaking a full line other than those four. The only other one is sort of really obscured, but, and they're all so good. And yeah, it's just, it sort of felt like Death at a Funeral. Did you ever see the British Death at a Funeral?
I might have.
Okay. Highly recommended. It's like one of my favorite as far as scripts and comedy because it all just keeps building, and everything is funny and everything is progressively funnier than what came before it. And that's totally how Carnage felt. And I love that type of movie, and it's just so rare, and absolutely highly recommend it.
I did see it.
Yeah. Jodie Foster was so funny. And not in Death and a Funeral. She wasn't in that. In Carnage. Yeah. Oh god, so funny, and it's really short. It's like 79 minutes. So
really,
yeah.
I did like Midnight in Paris.
Yes,
that was I wasn't. I think I grew up when I was a kid thinking that Woody Allen movies were just going to be really sad, and that like the humor was going to be sort of academic.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I learn about it, the more it's like, oh, these are like even if people that don't know any of these historical figures. Would find them funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's so like not lighthearted, but like intelligent and thoughtful and sincere. And yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. And Hemingway saying "Who wants to fight" is probably the hardest I laughed at a movie this year. And
yeah. No, he was good, but not over the top. I was like waiting for that to become a cartoon.
Yeah,
I was like, he's going to say like a catchphrase here or something, and he never did.
And that's the thing, like when there's that conversation's just over, and then he just yells out, "Who wants to fight?" And then boom, that's the end of the scene. And I just thought that was just so funny.
Maybe I've had my expectations, like maybe 2011 has done such a good job of beating my expectations into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was great. It was great. Midnight in Paris. Go see it.
Yeah.
Or stay home and see it. Go and get it and come back and then see it and then take it back.
Anything else you considered or that comedy that you really, really enjoyed before we move on to drama?
The only thing we haven't talked about that I've seen that I saw was The Muppets. And I thought it was I liked it, but it was overrated. The tone seemed weird.
The tone was weird. But I mean, the thing with The Muppets was that it was a kid's movie, you know? So there were parts that didn't work. And
that may have been part of my problem with it, though.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a kid's movie.
I think it really, really was. And, you know, I think the parts that didn't work for me didn't work for me because I'm not eight. So I think that was a big part.
Just like, I picture you, like, spitting in an eight-year-old's eye. Like, you like that? Fuck you.
There's a showing of Carnage playing after. You should come by.
I'll see you there. You can't get in? Yeah. Oh, right. Go home.
Are you not a Jodie Foster fan, 8-year old? Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And I mean, I enjoyed The Muppets again. My crush, Rashida Jones, was in it playing, you know, expository woman who wears business clothing.
She's playing Karen. She was playing early Karen.
No, she was playing the same person she played in The Social Network, which is the person that is there to move along the story and look good in business clothing. But anyways, drama.
Drama.
Hmm.
I think a lot of the better things that we've talked about have had really strong drama elements.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at like everything I'm like.
Yeah.
Maybe I just saw a lot of genre movies this year.
Okay.
And I'm trying to excuse that.
Well, speaking of genre movies, this is sort of one that I really wanted to single out. I don't consider it a great movie as a whole, but I thought it was just so good. And I feel like as far as movies from 2011 that I will end up watching five times, The Lincoln Lawyer is one of those.
I haven't seen it yet. It's on the list.
Very, very good. And I mean, I could just sort of be won over because it uses a lot of music I like. Oddly enough, there's a lot of hip hop in that movie. Yeah, Lincoln Lawyer is just really good, really entertaining, really well acted. There is a really impressive cast to that movie. Like, even down to bit parts, it's like Michael Pena playing a two-scene role and really trying. You know, it's really crazy. I think it was a first-time director. I think they've announced that there's possibly going to be a sequel, which I'm really interested in. Ryan Phillippe was great. Matthew McConaughey, I generally enjoy. I think he's just in a lot of bad movies, and when you put him in a good movie, he's really good.
I agree.
Well, okay.
Do you categorize that as just him having like a crappy agent?
No, I think he's one of those sort of, he's the rom-com Nicolas Cage, I think. He just sort of wants to have fun on a film set, and he knows how to elongate his career. It's do sit-ups in your trailer and then stand next to Kate Hudson for an hour and a half. Well, definitely watch The Lincoln Lawyer, and I recommend this to anybody. It was sort of like every year there's one or two of these movies, like State of Play, when that came out a couple years ago.
Still haven't seen that.
Yeah, really entertaining. James and I are going to do a podcast on it at some point online.
Who directed it?
Kevin MacDonald.
Like of Kids in the Hall?
No, of The Last King of Scotland.
I haven't seen that either.
It's really bad. And yeah, it's just that type of movie, or Fracture from 2007, which was super entertaining with Ryan Gosling. And
I haven't seen that.
A really great Anthony Hopkins performance, yeah. Or The Proposal. The Proposal from last year was really entertaining. But
see that either. Yeah. I'm going to interrupt you every time you list a movie that I haven't seen.
Okay.
Well, and I want to see how long you can go.
Speaking of movies you haven't seen, I really enjoyed Take Shelter.
I want to see it.
Yeah, with Michael Shannon. It was just an aesthetically really good movie, and I'm really, really into this whole Jessica Chastain being everywhere thing. I think she's a very good actress. I'm interested in her career going forward. And she's sort of like in that movie, which is about a man sort of slowly going insane, or thinking he's going insane, whatever. I still don't really have a whole take on the movie. Jessica Chastain has to play sort of his wife, who is the voice of reason and is just sort of the person watching all of this happen. She's sort of like the stand-in for the audience, I guess. Like, how, what would you do? And she's just really good. And I like her. So, did you see Moneyball?
I did not.
Are you serious?
No.
I thought you would have seen that. That was really good.
Listen, I'm not going to get into an explanation of my personal life.
No, that's fine. No, here's an explanation of my personal life. I wake up, 5 days out of the week, I don't go to work, and those 5 days I go to the movies instead. So it's just how
I work nights. So yeah. The thing is that now that I'm here, I'm within walking distance of a movie theater.
Yeah.
And I never have been. And they're playing Dragon Tattoo, but it started like an hour ago.
Okay.
So, well, I'm going to go to more. I promise.
That's fine. I really like Dragon Tattoo, but I explained that earlier. But Moneyball was really good, and it was really interesting because it was more about original thought than it was about baseball, which I liked.
I had heard that it was a really traditional movie.
Not at all. About what?
A movie about thinking outside of the box that was filmed inside the box.
It was kind of experimental at times. I think that was sort of one of the problems with it at times, but, I don't know. Yeah. I think it was sort of inside the box. It seemed like it had a late, well, and I know Aaron Sorkin did a rewrite of it at some point, but it seemed like towards the end, someone saw The Social Network or saw a rough cut of The Social Network and was like, we need this in Moneyball. And,
what else did you say that about earlier?
Friends with Benefits. Friends with Benefits seemed like something that was recut after somebody saw The Social Network, cut to make the dialogue a lot faster, because Friends with Benefits seemed super manic all throughout the movie. It just didn't feel right the way it was cut.
Oh, are we on drama now?
Yeah.
Still on drama?
Go for it.
Beginners.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was great. I thought it was going to be like, I really thought it was going to be depressing. I was preparing myself for a really awesome, depressing movie.
Yeah. And, just a quick,
it was so cool.
Yeah. Quick plot summary of Beginners, because I feel like this is something that not a lot of people are familiar with. It stars Ewan McGregor, Christopher Plummer, and, Melanie Laurent. And Ewan McGregor, his father is played by Christopher Plummer, who is, dying of cancer. He has cancer, right?
Yeah. It's cancer, I think.
Yeah. And at 75, after Ewan McGregor's mother has passed, Christopher Plummer tells his son Ewan that that he's gay, and
that's not even really the crux of it.
It
felt kind of like, oh, son, I'm gay. Like, oh, well, that makes me rethink about my childhood. Hmm. Like, well, no, it was for good reasons. Oh, okay. Rest of the movie, like it felt like it wasn't about him being gay or like a social agenda.
No, because it's not at all. It's not about a character being gay. It's not about a character dying. It's about, it's all in the title. It's about beginners. All throughout the movie, we see just a series of people realizing that they don't know anything about a certain situation. It's sort of Ewan McGregor hearing that he has to learn, he has to learn who his father is all over again, even though his father's 75. And he just feels like if there's anybody you should know, it's this person. Or it's him sort of trying to have a relationship, realizing or remembering that he's kind of terrible at that and sort of trying. And that's why Beginners is really interesting. And outside of that, it's a really funny movie.
It didn't have any agendas to push. And I don't mean that in a, like, I'm sick of hearing liberal Hollywood.
But, yeah. No, exactly.
I mean, I believe those things. I don't need to be convinced for 2 hours that he's a person because he's gay. It's like, he is. Why would you spend a movie talking about that?
No, I agree.
But their relationship. It was great. Yeah. It was really great.
And very funny. Music was great. The storytelling, I really loved the way the story was told. It's moderately postmodern, you know.
The cast was, like, there was a weird sort of subtlety to those relationships, and it felt like nobody was shouting their character type or their catchphrase or whatever. It was a lot of, like, there are these, like, little moments and little things that they say or imply, or the way they look at each other, or the things that they do are sort of complex in their reasoning. And
yeah.
It was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, and just a well-put-together
thing. Maybe 2011 wasn't so bad after all.
No, 2011 wasn't bad. It was just sort of, there was nothing really great. Like, I mean, Beginners is, like, probably my second favorite movie that came out in 2011, but I don't think it's as good as the second best movie that came out last year. You know,
I mean, I guess you could say that for me, looking at this and talking about it, you could say that 2011 defied expectations because I never thought that my top two would be cancer movies because they're always exploitative and kind of like a little ugly in that way.
Yeah, that's true. Any other dramas that you really enjoyed?
Not that I can think of. I mean, there was such a crunch in sort of November, December of them, like limited release things. Like,
yeah, I've
seen a lot of limited releases. I liked Adjustment Bureau more than I thought I would.
Yeah.
But more of a sci-fi movie, I guess.
Yeah. Speaking of the Adjustment Bureau, I guess it's good to move into performances. I mean, and I told you ahead of time, just because this is kind of how I judge performances, I really enjoy the ensemble performance or people working together. I thought Matt Damon and Emily Blunt were so good in the Adjustment
Bureau. Love her.
Pardon?
Love her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Damon was surprisingly good, too.
Damon's one of the most consistent actors out there. He's never the best actor in the world, but he's always in, like, the 90th percentile.
Like, kind of like a workaday, like, he'll be there.
And he'll be really good. And sort of like, I mean, the Bourne movies, he's really good with very little, you know? Like, he's just sort of a very physical presence, but he still gets a lot of things across. I think he's great in The Bourne Identity, particularly because that's the movie where he has lines. you know, I think he's never mind-blowingly good, but he's always very good. But yeah, I thought they were great together, and very rarely... Like, so rarely do I find actors having chemistry like Matt Damon and Emily Blunt had chemistry, you know?
Yeah, that was cool.
I find so rarely that I see a believable romantic couple in a movie, you know?
It had had production problems. Like, it was supposed to come out, like, a year and a half
ago. Yeah, it was supposed to come out September 2010.
And that's never, ever a good sign.
No.
And when I was watching it, I assumed there was going to be just this mess of a movie. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty good. It hung together well. Like, it didn't seem like there didn't feel like there were a lot of, like, I didn't see any glaring reshoots. There weren't parts of the movie that were, like, different in tone. It was pretty it was cool. Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I liked it. And I mean, it's sort of like a lot of the Philip K. Dick sort of movie, the good Philip K. Dick movies always kind of feel like short stories. Mm-hmm. Like Source Code was another example that was kind of like, it felt like a sort of a sci-fi parable, like almost like a long Twilight Zone episode.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I dug it. It's cool.
I really enjoyed it. And I mean, it's kind of hard to really boil down really quickly, but Matt Damon sort of is a politician, sort of like the people's politician. And Emily Blunt is a dancer or like, you know, any sort of artist. And the thing I really enjoyed about the movie was, and this is sort of something that I find in really great sci-fi, is that it just sort of boils down to one question. And the question with the Adjustment Bureau, and I don't mean this as like an ending question, like, how do you feel about this? You know, sort of like the Adjustment Bureau is basically saying, sitting you down and putting you in the scenario, you're told that fate exists and you have very little autonomy over your life. How do you react to that? And the movie is about Matt Damon reacting to that. And it's really interesting. And it also says some interesting things about politics. It says some interesting things about art, just in the professions that the main characters have. And while it doesn't work the whole time, like, I mean, the stuff with the hats is just goofy. Matt Damon does some really, really silly running that looks very like Tom Cruise in The Firm-esque. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. It was a great movie. Absolutely great. And I've watched it. That's the movie from 2011 that I've watched the most times. I've seen it like 8 or 9 times now. But
cool.
Yeah.
All right.
What are the performances did you really enjoy?
The Sheet in Paranormal Activity 3.
Yeah, I heard really good things about The Sheet.
Yeah. No, it acted like crazy.
Yeah.
And you're gonna hate me for my actual answer.
Okay.
One of the most memorable ones for me was in a movie that was terrible that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay, that's fine. Bring it up.
A bone of contention. I think The Preacher from Red State.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't seen Red State, so I really can't.
I'm surprised by that.
Really?
Yeah. I thought you were a Jordist. Are you telling me you're not a Jordist?
I hate Kevin Smith, and you know this.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Red State was really bad, okay. And it disappointed me. Sorry. It had a really cool like first half hour.
Okay.
And then it turned into
crap. Another performance is, or I guess this is sort of a joint thing, but the kids in Super 8. I think this is a fairly obvious one to anybody that saw Super 8.
I agree with you. I think that movie had problems, and I mean, I love J.J. Abrams until the day that I, you know, still he makes more crappy movies, which he hasn't. I love him. Movie had problems. Kids were great. Kids were fantastic.
I love that movie. I put it in my list of, I don't even know what my total number of favorite movies of the year was, but it was like 10 or 11.
What are your top 90 movies of the year?
I think I did choose 11. I think it was it, but I didn't number them, so it was okay. Yeah, I really love Super 8, and I mean, I thought the last scene of that movie was really great, I thought. And the kids in general were great, particularly Joel Courtney. I thought he was really good. And Elle Fanning, I am a really big fan of. I think she's going to be great. Between this and Somewhere, she's just, I don't know. I think she's going places.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. No, they were great. It really, they didn't feel like child actors. It felt like.
Yeah, no, exactly. It all just sort of felt right. You know,
being friends and being kids, and they didn't. Yeah, it was cool. It was good. Yeah, I mean, nothing else is really standing out to me here.
The last one I've got is Seth Rogen from 50-50. I thought he was really great.
Everybody in 50-50.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, Angelica Houston was amazing, too, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt was Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I
do have another one, actually.
Go for it.
Well, I mean, I singled out Kate Winslet and Jodie Foster in Carnage. I thought they were great. But, I mean, that whole cast is great. Young Adult, which I assume you didn't see.
I haven't seen yet. I was like, I want to. It's on my list. I've heard that the ending is very divisive.
Very divisive. I saw it in a full theater, and I wrote about it. I don't know if it's will have been posted by the time this podcast goes up, but I wrote about it for another website.
The audience started fighting the other half.
No. It's like I just saw it in a full theater, and the ending is ballsy. That's the thing about
I've
the ending.
I've heard that. I have.
And it made... And it was sort of like I was undecided walking out. And the second half of the movie isn't great, and you sort of have to process it before you realize that it might be a great movie. It's just sort of... it's a type of great that comes with some conditions. And I think the reason it felt so weird is because it is very different. But anyways, Charlize Theron, I thought she was great. And Patton Oswalt, their scenes together, I thought were really, really good.
I like Patton.
Yeah.
Well. I'm a big Patton fan. I really didn't like him a couple years ago.
Okay.
But.
You really hated Ratatouille?
I didn't like Ratatouille.
Okay. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it.
I saw Ratatouille, and I mean, I have to say, in the interest of full disclosure, I saw Ratatouille during the most intense hangover I've ever had.
Okay, well, that never helps.
This is so bright.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so super long. Hungover. You know what I'm going to do? Watch an impressively bright Pixar film that is 2 hours about talking rats. That's what I want to do when I'm hungover.
I didn't think that the story or the idea were as good as some Pixar's other movies. So
okay,
I'll give it another chance. But I do like Patton, and I do want to see it. And I think Charlize Theron is. I haven't seen Monster.
Yeah,
I haven't seen her in anything that has been like amazing. And, you know, she's okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've never really loved her, and I mean, it's just sort of. She just kills some of these lines in this movie. It's a really funny movie when it's a comedy, and there's some really sketchy stuff in the movie.
It felt like it was going to be a straightforward comedy from the trailer.
Yeah, yeah, it's really
that was why
I don't even know that I saw the trailer. But anyways, yeah, it's sort of my last performance that I really liked, and it was sort of a joint thing. But worst performances. Anything really jumping out?
Give me a minute. You go through yours.
Ryan Gosling in Drive.
Whoa, controversial choice.
I don't know why it's controversial. I just there's just something about him. He is the thing that seems out of place in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. No, when he's what is it? When Bryan Cranston is like, oh, you can give her a ride home when they're at the garage, and he's kind of like gives her that smile, like trying to be the stoic. Guy that he isn't.
Yeah, and it's
he's not. He's never been stoic in his life.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. Because like I've been very vocal about being a big Ryan Gosling fan, and I really hope it's not just sort of like now he's super popular, so now I'm turning. You know, like because he's still really good in Half Nelson, probably. You know, but I don't know. Something about him in this movie just didn't work for me. But yeah,
so you didn't like his performance, or you didn't like Drive overall?
Oh, I love Drive. I just felt like he seemed out of place. He seemed like terrible casting. And I know his performance was kind of stylized, like when he, you know, after one of the head scenes when he turns around, he's got his eyes fully wide open, and it's just, I don't know, it's just weird. Something about that about him, it just didn't work.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really liked it. I might put it on my list.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to be at gunpoint, make a list, I'd probably say Drive is on it.
Yeah. Oh, it's certainly on my list. But
yeah, he stuck out.
Yeah. Do you have any choices for worst performance? Because that was kind of my only one.
you asked the question so that you could answer it.
Yeah.
Blake Lively and Green Lantern.
Okay.
Looking down the list. No.
Okay.
You know. Someone from Take Me Home Tonight. I don't know who.
Okay.
Anybody.
That was a good movie, though.
I had fun, but like, yeah, pick one of them. Pick one of those actors.
One of them that isn't Anna Faris or Topher Grace, please. Thank you.
Anna Faris was surprisingly great.
Anna Faris is always great. Why are people surprised?
I was going to qualify that. Like, I qualify everything. She's been in mostly terrible movies.
Yeah, she has been in almost entirely terrible movies.
We are both fans of her, but if you had to explain to another person what she's been in
mm-hmm.
that we've liked, it would be a
The short. Only choice is Lost in Translation. That's the only thing you can say. And I kind of wrote something about it, and it just never ended up on the internet. But if you look at her IMDb, I counted it out, and I wish I still had those numbers in front of me. yeah, it's really like remarkably bad percentage. Remarkably bad.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
And not like a Nick Cage, like she does everything. Like she's narrowly avoided being in some good movies, it seems.
Yeah. Do you have anything really to say for cinematography or score? Because I might just cut those.
No.
Okay.
Hans Zimmer was really cool in Sherlock. I just saw it, and Sherlock was very, like, the way that I thought to put it was, this is not a movie that lied on his resume. I got exactly what I wanted out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. I had a good night. Yeah. But Hans's music stood out in both of those movies.
Yeah, no, I was actually kind of disappointed in the second one because I didn't enjoy it as much as I enjoyed the first movie's music. But I guess that's sort of just, I was so surprised by how extremely interesting the music was in the first Sherlock Holmes movie.
Yeah, I agree. It wasn't new. It wasn't a new thing that was like, yeah. It was good though.
Yeah. Least favorite movies that you saw?
30 minutes or less.
Okay.
Red State was really disappointing for not just like, oh, I thought it was Kevin Smith and it was going to be great.
No.
Just the trailer was so good and there were parts of it that were good and there was the promise of a really cool horror movie. Mm-hmm. Like just like one of those like straight to video, no one saw it horror movies. And then it turned into something else at the end. And it's like, he forgot what he was doing halfway through.
Yeah,
30 minutes or less was like, I was expecting a lot because I like everybody in it.
Yeah.
And then I did, it felt like sort of almost mean spirited. And then to find out that it was about a real thing and then they denied that it was about a real thing.
Yeah.
It rubbed me the wrong way. It really rubbed me the wrong way. Anywhere else that I've read this movie being mentioned in those best of lists that we've talked about, I think Your Highness was great. No one else liked it.
Okay.
Everybody hated it.
I didn't like it.
You know how we were talking about how James Franco is totally unbelievable as a scientist?
Yeah.
You know what he's totally believable as?
A medieval prince?
James Franco playing a medieval prince in a stoner movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Where no one's really acting amazingly. Like, it's a lot of, like, these are the actors that you know. And we're doing like a sort of 1970s Cheech and Chong style thing. Yeah. James Franco is believable. They're like, oh yeah, James Franco would show up and just like have fun at this thing.
Yeah.
I believe it. That's cool.
Yeah. Hall Pass. I thought Hall Pass is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
It's awful.
I wasn't expecting a lot, but I'm surprised that you would put it in that like sphere.
I really didn't like Cedar Rapids. I thought that was really bad.
I heard good things about it.
Yeah,
I was like kind of interested.
Totally confusing to me. It's terrible. Cowboys and Aliens is awful. Warrior was awful.
Really? Yeah. I heard a lot of people loved Warrior.
Yeah, people applauded when I saw it, and I was just totally perplexed. It's just like a really... It's the Rocky formula.
It's like The Fighter? It looked like The Fighter.
The Fighter was a little bit less formulaic. And The Fighter was a lot more good than Warrior was. And it was just bad. It was a by-the-numbers movie. And
I love Tom Hardy, though.
So that doesn't... What?
Watch Bronson. Just okay. Okay. I guess when I go to see it, I'll just like watch Bronson again.
Or just don't see Warrior. How's that? I didn't like.
In Time?
Yeah. Really didn't like. Conan O'Brien Can't Stop was really bad.
Why did you not like Conan O'Brien Can't Stop?
It just felt like, White People Problems the movie.
we've been doing a podcast on our,
has anything
we ever... talked about Friday Night Lights for like 3 hours and so many of those problems were white people problems.
Yeah, but they're middle class white people problems.
Okay, so there's some struggle.
Have you ever seen a movie that was more white people problems?
So the realization
it's just like, I have to go out and perform in front of all of these people that love me. Oh, I just don't want to do that. I'm so drained. Oh, I have to meet all these people that adore me. Oh, terrible. Oh my God, my tour sold out so fast. Oh. oh, I lost this television show and got paid off by $50 million. Oh, it's terrible. I'm so sad.
I guess when you put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Conan O'Brien, please stop. And the last movie I really hated was Melancholia. It was just really...
Really?
Yeah.
I've heard such varying opinions on it. Brent just saw it, like, I think tonight even.
Oh, really?
He saw it tonight or last night, and he said he liked it. And yeah. I also heard... I really liked it, but I never, ever want to watch it again.
Yeah, I really didn't care for it. And I think part of it was that thematically it was really close to Take Shelter, except Take Shelter didn't suck.
I want to see Take Shelter so badly.
Yeah, Take Shelter didn't suck. So, yeah. What is the movie you are most likely to recommend to somebody from 2011?
For people that don't have like a weak stomach... and they can handle violence, I would say Drive, because I think it's got a pretty broad appeal.
Yep. I would have trouble recommending that one, because it is kind of slow. It's slow. People don't really, aren't really expecting what they get, generally, when they see Drive.
Yeah. I think Your Highness for stoners, Our Idiot Brother for most of my friends, because, like, it's kind of, it's got a nice cast, and it's generally pretty agreeable.
And it's funny. It's also funny.
Paranormal Activity 3 for people who liked Paranormal Activity 2.
And great performances by Sheets.
Featuring Sheets and moving camera.
Yeah.
No, and I am a total sissy when it comes to that, and I was terrified.
Okay, cool.
Because I bought into the, like, nothing happens for so long, and then you're just waiting for it.
Yeah.
Midnight in Paris for people that read books and need to lighten up. any Marvel movie for... women that want to see men with their shirts off.
Yeah.
And then also want to hear their men friends talk about guys with their shirts off.
Yep. Yeah. I guess the movies I'm most likely to recommend to people are, and I mean, it's a difference between like favorite movie of 2011 and,
because that's a very different question.
Yeah. Cause I'm unlikely to recommend my favorite movie of 2011 to a wide variety of people. Just because I feel like it's a tough sell. But as far as like really, really good movies that I think also a lot of people would enjoy, Lincoln Lawyer, 50-50, and Beginners are my movies for sure.
I don't know if I would recommend... I've had people tell me that... I've had people tell me that they thought Beginners was depressing. I didn't find that, but I could kind of see where people are coming from.
Yeah, no, I can definitely... Anytime... you know, some of the subject matter that they deal with, anytime that happens, you know, you're going to...
50-50, though, I definitely agree with. I think 50-50 had a very different tone.
Yeah. And what is your favorite, absolute favorite movie of 2011?
I hadn't thought about it until we talked about it, like, just now, like, through this podcast. And I think for me, 50-50.
Cool. I'm going with The Adjustment Bureau for reasons I have explained.
See previous.
Yeah.
I won't repeat myself.
Yeah.
Listeners, I won't.
No, I really liked how I mean the key thing I want in a movie is for it to be interesting. I want me to sort of want to see it again. I want to think about it after I'm done watching it. And I enjoyed the question of what would you do if you're told, like, without a shadow of a doubt that fate exists, you have some autonomy, but very, very little. What would you do? And I also really enjoyed Matt Damon and Emily Blunt because I feel like they're a type of romantic couple that you almost never see in movies. It's sort of like the Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy thing or Coach and Mrs. Coach type of thing where it's just so rare and they just felt so, you know, so for real together. And yeah, what it said about politics and art was really interesting as well. What about any sort of trends in 2011 in film? Did you see anything really sort of like,
Like I said, the sort of the action movies that I saw were, they had a hook. Like, it seemed like this was the year where I saw things where I was expecting some of the comic book movies to be generic, but they had like a very specific hook or a specific tone. Was expecting more traditional action movies than I got.
Okay.
That may have had to do with what I saw. More than anything else. I don't know. No, I mean, we're all just waiting for the Batman movie next year. I think I speak for every listener and everyone that's not listening, that we're just waiting for The Dark Knight Rises. That was what 2011 is in a nutshell. Yep. Just waiting for it.
Yeah, the only reason your favorite movie of 2011 wasn't actually set photos from The Dark Knight Rises was because I would not allow it.
What? No, it was. I don't care if you want
to. Okay. Well, something I saw in 2011, just in general, I found it really interesting, is for the year, it seemed that there were a lot of really personal movies made, and sort of like reflective movies, like, oh God, I didn't even mention Tree of Life. I really like Tree of Life. Sorry, the reason I didn't mention that is because we cut the cinematography bit. And I love Tree of Life because of its cinematography. The idea was you're seeing the world from a child's eye view. Pretty much everything in that movie is shot from, you know, like a kid's eye view, and it's all really gorgeous. But yeah, that was a very autobiographical film from Terrence Malick, who a lot of people might not really know, but maybe you've seen The Thin Red Line, but he's sort of like a critical darling. He's been a favorite of mine for a while. And it's the first time he's really gotten sort of explicitly autobiographical, or not really tried to hide it. Hugo, Martin Scorsese movie, was very much about Scorsese's early life in a way, you know, thinly veiled, but pretty clearly about Scorsese and his love of film. Even David.
I was going to say, what about Dragon Tattoo? You think that was a personal movie? I haven't seen it, but it just, I wouldn't have. I'm surprised.
In a way, because as James and I talked about it really early on, it's sort of the Fincheriest Fincher movie. And I sort of explained this at the beginning of the podcast, which you haven't heard yet because you weren't I'm on sorry. Yet. But
at least I didn't leave.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, he's doing research. James is doing research. And I mean, even movies like The Artist, Super 8, and you can make an argument for Fast 5, they're all sort of looking back to another time in film. And Midnight in Paris, a Woody Allen movie. It's a real nostalgia-based movie. But
yeah, that
back.
Movie was totally... Like, I mean, he does that a lot, but it was him. You could tell that it was him. And he,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's had those feelings.
And Young Adult was even... I mean, is written by Diablo Cody, who wrote Juno, wrote Jennifer's Body, and who just sort of writes about young characters. And you can make an argument that, I mean, that's kind of what she does, is write about young adults. I mean, I don't think she's the person that she's writing about in Young Adult, but
I liked Jennifer's Body more than I was expecting to.
I didn't think it was terrible, but I didn't love it. And yeah, the other thing about Young Adult that I found was really interesting, it was sort of like Arrested Development and people that care about each other, or care about themselves too much and don't care about anybody else. And I think sort of this personal trend in movies that I saw this year, I think it's sort of like, I don't know, I think like Twitter, blogs, podcasts, and it sort of made more explicit personal reflection okay with society in general. And like maybe 10 years ago, these things seem kind of self-indulgent, but now it's fine and sometimes even praised, you know? It's just, I don't know, that's just sort of how, if I had to sum up 2011 in film, I'd say that. And I don't know that it's necessarily a good thing that this is the trend of film.
If you had to put a theme to the year, at least to the ones that I saw, I don't know if I would disagree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd have to compare it to other years, but I mean, I don't know. Yeah. All right. Personal.
Yeah. And I mean, art is always going to be personal, but I think maybe it's just sort of more thinly veiled now. And this is something I was thinking about earlier when I was sort of coming up with this, is that it could just be that I'm smarter now. You know, like, it's... And by I'm smarter
than
now,
smarter than me and no, all
no,
listeners?
I'm smarter than me in 2001, you know, when I was also watching movies from 2001 but wouldn't have thought of these things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess.
So
okay.
It's just sort of like every year you get smarter and you're going to think of new things, you know?
So would you say this has been a year of personal reflection for you?
Do you think that's maybe it?
We're not talking about that now?
No, we're not. You're not allowed to Marc Maron me.
Come on.
Over this. It's not happening. Yeah,
you've given...
I have a blog and a podcast and a Twitter account, you know, so...
You're delving inward more often.
Sure.
You've answered most of... I've been looking at the spreadsheet most of this. That's how I think in spreadsheets. And... You've answered most of my questions of the movies that I marked down that I was interested in seeing, that I haven't seen, that you watched.
Yeah.
Except for Win-win?
I didn't like it.
Contagion?
It was really entertaining, but I mean, walk, don't run.
Okay. Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, I really wanted to see it.
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, it had some moments that were really good. I thought Olsen was pretty good. John Hawks was John Hawks, so he was really good. I think that's like the third time I've used that type of phrasing to say an actor was good. But yeah, no, he's always good. And Olsen was very good. It was just sort of, there was something about it that wasn't quite there.
Did you like Winter's Bone?
I did. And actually, if I had to compare it to something, I would compare it to Winter's Bone in that they're very simple movies anchored by good performances. In each movie, one of those good performances is John Hawks. But yeah, it's not something I'm going to watch three times, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I would put Drive in that category because Drive felt very sort of straightforward and stylistically strong. And
yeah, but I mean, I guess I'm just sort of more into the stylistic elements because I saw like pretty much everything I love about film in Drive. And like I've seen it three times. I saw it three times in theaters. I'll watch it again. But yeah, that's everything. So now we can get right into it with 4 hours of Friday Night Lights talk.
Okay, so
no, I'm just kidding. Thank you for listening to the MacGuffin Men listeners. But yeah, we'll be back next week, and I believe next week James is back, and we'll be talking about Jurassic Park.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Men. This episode has been brought to you by the morning after movie sex scene. So that's why I slept with my bra on. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.